Good morning. Let's call this meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is 11:40 a.m. on Thursday, February 12, 2015. Welcome to the House Special Committee on Economic Development, Tourism, and Arctic Policy. With us today on the committee is Representative Stutz, Representative Ortiz, and myself, Chair Herron. We expect two or three that will join us here in a few minutes. Today we have two presentations, one from the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development and the Division of Economic Development Director Joe Jacobson, and then following Joe will be the Alaska Travel Industry Association present with President Sarah Leonard. Mr. Jacobson is already at the podium. Please put yourself on the record and give your presentation. And if there's questions during your presentation, I'm going to ask that my colleagues don't wait till the end. So, Joe, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joe Jacobson. I'm the Director of the Division of Economic Development in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. So I just wanted to start off with a quick definition of economic development, which is the process of creating wealth through investment, reinvestment, and reinvestment in a community resulting in more jobs, higher incomes, and expanded tax base, a more diversified economy, business improvement, and a better quality of life. That said, I think that economic development is one of those topics that it extends far beyond that, and just the division plays a small role. But I mean, really, I think that economic development in terms of education and other policies, it kind of extends beyond. And there's an overarching component to pretty much every decision we do in terms of building communities and educating our future leaders. So within the Division of Economic Development, there are three core functions, finance, development, and tourism marketing. Within our finance section, we administer and service 11 loan funds with total outstanding principal of exceeding over $200 million. The bulk of that is really in commercial fishing loans, and the largest number of loans go out to the commercial fishing sector. The greatest dollar value is really split almost equally between commercial fishing and the fisheries enhancement program, so DIPAC and a lot of salmon hatcheries that have generated a lot of value for the state's fishermen. We also have some small business loan funds. There's an avionics program, a charter fisheries program, and then there's a specific rural development initiative fund, which is extremely popular. And in addressing one of the questions that was asked regarding what can we do to stimulate entrepreneurship and business development in rural Alaska, the continuation of that rural development initiative fund. It's actually an ADA fund that's administered by my division. It would be a recommendation because it's a very useful fund and it's extremely popular.
Is the bulk fuel loan program, is that a pretty busy program for you?
Well, the bulk fuel loan fund is really, we take care of the technical side of that, but really it's more of a Department of Community and Regional Affairs program. They're the ones who are actually making the loans. We're just providing the administrative services behind the scenes.
Thank you.
It's part of our program, but it's not an active function of ours. In terms of our development overview, I wanted to just give some of our major initiatives that we took on this year. There was the Arter reauthorization, and we also made some changes to that program, the way we administer it, and there have been some changes in the participation on that. I'll get into that more fully later on in the presentation. Cultural tourism, our North to Opportunity branding message, which you can see I left some of the different brochures on your for each of the representatives here, and there's a variety of them. We've been doing a lot of work with unmanned aircraft systems, both in terms of doing an economic development strategy and promotion. We developed an economic impact study for a new port in the community of Amonic. We've launched a statewide business retention and expansion program, which is another one of the things that's really intended to help communities reach out and understand the needs of their business community and react proactively to the needs of their community versus reacting when somebody goes out of business or moves away. We've been continuing with our Made in Alaska Home project, which has both a rural and urban component. We've been working in seafood byproducts, our Iceland trade mission, which went to kind of compare what Iceland's doing to what Alaska's doing.
So on the trade mission, how big was it?
We had 12 private sector participants.
Go ahead.
12 private sector. There's actually someone from the university there, and then Brian Holst of JEDC. So there were 10 industry members, and then two from either university or a local economic development agency.
So were you on it?
I was not. Matt Catterson, our fisheries, is the economic development advisor, but he really works primarily on fisheries issues.
What do you think was the successful takeaway?
To be honest with you, I think the takeaway was Alaska doesn't need to be that envious of Iceland. I think that there's a lot that Iceland that we can learn from them, but I think most of the people who were on that came away feeling like they really weren't behind, and in some ways they were further advanced than even what they saw on part of that mission. I think that where Iceland has an advantage over Alaska is they're much smaller, so it actually allows for a more active collaboration between the different factories and the plant managers and things, whereas in Alaska, outside of maybe Kodiak, Dutch Harbor, and some other real fishing towns, we're just such a geographically broad state, it's hard to kind of have that true cluster development approach to that sector.
My wife and I have been there a couple of times, both for legislative business, and it's a remarkable country, and they want to have a relationship with Alaska, of course. But one factoid that really struck me is here recently there was a mentally unstable person who was holed up in a hotel, and he was using a rifle to threaten to shoot people. And policemen do not carry guns, but they have a SWAT team that does, and so they had to deal with that incident. And the individual died in the confrontation, and that's, to us, that's probably not really remarkable until you know that that was the first time that public safety officers had killed someone in a line of duty in 200 years. That was really remarkable. So, I mean, I like going there, but I hope that we can continue to strengthen relationship with Iceland. Please go ahead. Representative Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see you have mariculture expansion and hatcheries. Are you involved in any kind of shellfisheries? Do you have any dealings with any of the shellfish?
Representative Stutz, through the chair, we've been working with quite a few different shellfish farmers, and in terms of the hatcheries, we work closely with Oceans Alaska. We conducted a hatchery audit, an operational audit of the Oceans Alaska hatchery. We brought up someone with 40 years of experience. I may even be underestimating how much experience the gentleman had. And he went through and really just why hasn't this been as productive as you initially thought? And through the findings of the report, it came back that hatchery, the existing hatchery, without requiring more than a nominal investment, in the tens of thousands of dollars versus the millions of dollars that they originally had envisioned, they could increase productivity dramatically just through, you're doing this wrong, you need to clean a little bit more here, you need to separate things, really basic things from his standpoint. And it allowed the Oceans Alaska Board to go back, develop a new business plan, and actually receive a loan, not a grant, to continue operations. And I mean, there's a great deal of optimism around that project. I know the people involved, the degree of professionalism, and I think real world approach to that, I think is new. And to me, it's exciting because, quite frankly, when I started with mariculture, I try to find industries that are going to stand on their own and that aren't going to rely on grants in perpetuity. And kind of when I took this project on, I want to support the industry, but let's see how this yields a viable business plan. They were able to do that, and I think it's going to even exceed expectations based on gooey duck and oyster demand.
Follow up?
Please. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in dealing with the Oceans Alaska, have you had any dealings with any particular company in growing the babies that they sell to the oyster farms? Because it seems, I understand that that's the real issue with both goo ducks, and it's becoming an issue with with oysters, that these growers can't get the, I don't know what you call it, larvae or
seed or
seed.
Yeah.
Thank you. That would be this word I'm looking for, the seed, to even maintain their farms at this point. And so I was wondering if you had any exposure to anybody interested in going in that direction.
So that's Representative Seuss through the chair. That's actually what Oceans Alaska's mission is to actually provide seed both for goo duck and oyster to the farmers in state. So not only, it's a non-profit hatchery, so it's there not necessarily to make a profit. I mean, they want to make a profit just like DIPAC and others so they can continue to be operationally viable, but their interest is in providing seed to Alaska's shellfish farmers, and as you identified, it has been a major problem. So in helping Oceans, we're creating jobs in Ketchikan. We're also creating enough. We're creating an enterprise that's going to continue to provide seed for goo duck farmers and oyster farmers across the state.
Thank you.
So, Joe, in the introduction, either I or you shared for the record what your job was before you accepted this one.
For the record, prior to accepting this job, I was the international director with the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. So I served in that role for about 4.5 years, and before that was the Asia. I was focused on the Asia markets.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead.
So following up, we've been doing a great deal of minerals promotion work. That's kind of falls in line with some of the North Opportunity piece, promoting some of the projects, trying to attract investment. And we've been focusing also on trends and opportunities in the maritime industrial services sector, and really trying to capture as much value in servicing Alaska's fishing, and I say fishing, but really all of Alaska's fleet, whether it's for transportation, whether it's for fishing, whether it's for oil and gas work. We'll start with the ARTA program update. The ARTA program was reauthorized in HB 71 last session, and following that passage, we got grants out to everyone who was in the program. We did actually have a little bit of a shakeup in terms of the and ARTA is the Alaska Regional Development Organization program, for those of you who aren't aware. It's we did remove two different, we removed the designation from two different organizations, and that was the Interior Rivers and Lower Kuskokwim Economic Development Council. This was because they no longer met the requirements to be an ARTA. At that same time, we went out and actively started working in that region to court a new representative for the region, and we were fortunate to have the Association of Village Council Presidents step forward and go through the process, and they became an ARTA that really encompasses the entire region of those prior ARTA organizations and actually expands it into the lower Yukon area as well. So it's a natural fit. It's really the region that ABCP represents already, and they have the organizational capacity to and talent to actually implement the program effectively in a manner that's probably going to better suit the region. In addition to this, we've also been working to really improve accountability. We've been increasing the amount of performance measures that we're asking from different programs and trying to make sure that we have demonstrable results in everything that they're taking on. So our Made in Alaska Home project is really, this was launched this past fall in Anchorage, and this is a home that's for sale. It's was built in conjunction, well, it was built by the Peterson Group, who worked closely with the Division of Economic Development on the promotional side of it. Featured Alaska-made cabinets, countertops, really as much locally manufactured home products that you could put into the building we use, and we hope to see it as being a model for developing more, or really supporting the manufacturing sector in the state. Concurrently, we started working with the Cold Climate Housing Research Center and ABCP prior to even them becoming an ARTA on looking at the integrated trust design homes that they've been trying to push in the lower Kuskokwim area. And what this has evolved into is really helping ABCP develop a business plan for a truss plant and then eventually even a sawmill so that they can basically have local housing needs met, the lumber for local housing needs delivered and built all in region. So I think it'll be a nice economic development driver, and it's been a collaborative process through ABCP, the Cold Climate Housing Research Center, and the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development has also been working with ABCP on a more precise business plan.
So a little housekeeping here. Our number 7 in the paperwork is not lined up with your number 7 on the screen.
I apologize for that.
Okay, so... All right, just back a little ways.
I think, I apologize, I think what happened is I actually moved this forward to coincide with the ARDER program, but there should be the same number of slides, and it'll get back on order in a second. I apologize.
Okay. For the record, Representative Tilton has joined us. So, all right, so let's move on. Okay, now we're, okay.
Sorry.
Our number 7 is your number 8.
So the Northwest Cultural Tourism and Native Arts project that we've been working on is really just to stimulate tourism in rural Alaska and using cultural aspects as a driver. This has been something that's been talked about for a while prior to me joining the division, and this past summer we put together a familiarization tour where we took 4 Alaskan companies out to Anchorage. We started in Anchorage, then took them to Kotzebue, Nome, White Mountain Council, and Savunga. Just to really see what was available. And there were a lot of really interesting products, and some are ready to be sold as products in a commercial tour. Some aren't. So as a follow-up going forward this next year, we'll be working with the region to try to bolster the capabilities and capacities of some of the people we worked with so that we can put together really a broader, more consistent offering that's going to yield a good experience for both the communities and for the operators working in the region. The Alaska North Opportunity brochures, as I mentioned, we've had a variety of brochures, and this is really to promote Alaska as a place to do business. The phrase that's constantly used is Alaska is open for business. We've coined the term kind of a play on Alaska's North to the Future, North to Opportunity. In surveys, whenever you're dealing with the business community, opportunity is the word that seems to resonate the most from outside interests. So we put together brochures talking about Alaska's general business climate, opportunities in unmanned aircraft systems, a broader natural resource piece, and then specific pieces in minerals and mining. And then this is meant to be a continuing evolution. This is just where we're at for the time being. Our unmanned aircraft system industry development. This started out with Barbara Johnson, who was working with the Fairbanks North Star Borough as part of the ARDER program, reached out to the division last year to help them promote Alaska as a place for investment in the unmanned aircraft system industry. So alongside the University of Alaska Fairbanks, we went to the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International trade show in Orlando last year and put together a nice booth that had, there'll be another example here of a comparable booth, but basically it was a meeting place for all Alaskans. And it was Alaska was pretty much alongside Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, multi-billion dollar companies, and had a great presence and it generated a tremendous amount of interest. This actually later translated into meeting with a company named CAE, that's a leader in delivering aviation and unmanned aircraft system training solutions. So they operate a variety of simulators. It's a multi-billion dollar company. They work both in civilian, commercial, and military applications. And we brought them up to Alaska to evaluate sites to actually open a facility in Alaska. And those negotiations are still going on. They've kind of gone from the Division of Economic Development to working closely with the Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft System and Integration through the university. But I think that's still progressing, and it was us being aggressive and going out and courting new business opportunities in the state. And Alaska is a great place for training, both from our military, because we're going to have practical applications from unmanned aircraft systems, airspace, and because we're 8 hours from 90% of the industrialized world. So that's our thought in that.
So for the committee's information, the the previous chair of this committee, Shelley Hughes, really took on unmanned vehicle legislation, and so just wanted a shout out for Shelley. Please go ahead.
And on your desk, there's also an unmanned aircraft systems economic development strategy for Alaska. In this, it gives an overview of everything that's been done in Alaska. It compares Alaska to other jurisdictions that are aggressively courting unmanned aircraft system business, and lays forward a variety of policy suggestions just for consideration is if the state wants to seriously court this sector. I think that the state has an early lead because of our airspace and designation as a test site and all the practical applications that have been going on here, but just airspace alone doesn't overcome how aggressive California, Arizona, Nevada, Oregon, and other places are going after business through research and development tax credits. And I'm not here making recommendations. It's just more to provide an overview of what our competitors are doing and what we need to consider to make sure that we capture as much value from the industry here as possible. Our Iceland trade mission, which was a follow-up to the passage of SB 71 last year, which extended the value-added seafood salmon processing tax credit, and it also extended it to herring and allowed for changes in can sizes, can size manufacturing, and also expanded it to include more byproduct processing. So as a follow-up, we took a group of 12, 10 private industry members and then one person from the university and a local economic developer to Iceland. When I say took, we facilitated the mission. Everybody else paved their own way. So it was not a highly subsidized thing. The industry is very interested. And we learned that Alaska's companies are actually pretty technologically advanced. There's a lot we can do in terms of making sure that we work better together and maybe utilize cluster development more effectively. But our industry, we may not be as good about trumping what we're doing, but there's quite a bit of highly advanced things going on in some of these rickety old canneries that may not appear to have the kind of technology and innovation in byproduct processing or fish oil or other things. Our statewide business retention and expansion program started with a workshop this past summer. We've also provided a software solution for a variety of communities around the state. This is really to allow community economic developers, either through the chamber or through local agencies, depending on who's championing this, to reach out to their business community and have a better understanding of what's going on. We've already done workshops in Soldotna. Juneau is coming up, I believe. Ketchikan we've been working with. Haines is coming up. Kodiak we'll be working with in the near future. And then there's also been other Fairbanks, Anchorage, Palmer, and Homer as well.
Excuse me.
Yes, Representative Ortiz.
So, Mr. Jacobson, you're saying that these workshops, you're looking to put them in other locations throughout the state, and you have been doing that, and that'll happen?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, that's correct. Yeah, they've already happened, and we'll be carrying that out through the rest of the year. I'd also note that a good chunk of the funding for that program was actually provided through a federal grant, so it was a grant we applied for through the Connect Alaska program, and we received it's a significant amount of funding. I think we've really just donated in-kind contributions through staff time to accomplish that. So it's been a highly efficient and productive program.
Thank you.
When's the next one, and where?
I'd have to follow up with you on that. I don't know it off the top of my head. There's quite a few coming up in the next month. I just can't remember which next one is.
Yes, Representative Stutz.
Thank you. Along that note, it'd be nice if we had a schedule of where they all were, the ones that you have scheduled thus far. If we could get a schedule of those, that would be nice. Thank you.
Yeah, just get it to Robert. We'll distribute it to the committee members.
So in our minerals promotion, the booth that you see up there is very similar to what we had at the unmanned aircraft system show. It was we seem to be using towers that have Alaska across the top of them. It really is a nice venue. You can see it from across most trade halls. And like I said, it holds up well against multi-billion-dollar companies. In the minerals promotion venue, we've been working attending conferences at the Prospectors Development Association of Canada in Toronto last year. We recently, this picture is actually from the Cambridge House Mineral Investment Forum, which was in Vancouver earlier in January. We participate in this alongside industry. We had 12 different exploration and development companies in the booth or around the booth with us. We had representatives from ADA and DNR there as well. And really, it's just, I mean, the term federal overreach has been thrown around a ton, and it's certainly, I'm not mean to make light of it, but Alaska as a state is actually an extremely pro-mining jurisdiction and pro-resource development jurisdiction. And while, sure, we have challenges like the rest of the United States does because of federal regulation as a state, we actually have a great story to tell. And it's meant to go out and support our mineral industry and combat a lot of the perception that you can't get a project done here, when in actuality that's not the case, as you can see by Red Dog and the success that they've had, as well as the other five operating mines in the state. And then you can see in your reports, the Alaska Minerals Commission report, we've been working closely with them to kind of make sure their message gets out, and through our North to Opportunity materials to, again, just talk about the state as a positive place to do business. Our trends and opportunities in the Alaska maritime industrial support sector was something that we commissioned a report with the McDowell Group to look at, but obviously work very closely with them. I've been working with the Alaska Maritime Workforce Development Group, and through those contacts and through others with Vigor and other smaller maritime industrial support providers in the state, really this project defines the entire fleet of Alaska. And if you go to the PDF online, you can actually go and scroll over every community, find out what its tidal grid is, find out what its fleet is. I can give you every single vessel that's currently operating in Alaska, the whole material, year of construction. And some of the findings in this report are, I mean, we're probably never going to build cruise ships here, but there's probably a great opportunity, especially in the 100-foot and under category, to make sure that we can capture some of the work that's being done in Ballard and other parts of the Pacific Northwest and capture that in state. And obviously the shipyard and what they're building will have a role in shipbuilding, but it kind of focuses on what communities can do to maximize the value of their existing fleets, so with some commonsensical solutions. And we'll be doing more work with this going forward, but this was the first foray into it. Our Arctic Shipping Initiative was conducted, or it's being conducted by Dr. Lawson Brigham. This is really more of an FYI. It'll be done by the end of the month, and upon completion of the report, I'll make sure it's distributed to the group. I've seen a draft. I haven't had a chance to go through it fully, but as I mentioned, by the end of the month, please expect to be seeing more on this, and it's a rather substantial document. So going into our tourism marketing program, this is a huge part of what we do. We work very closely with the private sector. Prior to the establishment of the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board, we work closely through the ATIA marketing committee structure and a variety of their committees to get input from the private sector on how to implement the program, which is, like I said, now been transferred over to the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board. Some of the overall highlights of the program generated almost 800,000 consumer information requests, generating 220 trips. The return on investment for what we spend on this program is over $100 in terms of spend, including on transportation. We've continued our relationship with Iceland Air, which grew by 7% this past year, and we're going to continue to work with them this year to make sure that service continues and expands. It's really a great way to get folks from Northern Europe to Alaska in the summertime, and we'll continue to work with other airlines to try to expand the amount of routes and services into the state. We work closely with the governments of Alberta, British Columbia, and the Yukon to promote road travel to the state through the ultimate road trip. We do a lot with public relations work, which yields a tremendous return on investment. We had almost $44 million in equivalent ad value from our PR program. That program's about $1 million, so it's a great return on investment. And we generated almost 1.8 million site visits to TravelAlaska.com. So in terms of the way the program's focused, it's really about generating awareness and then translating that awareness into visits. So we're really trying to generate new high potential prospects in North America, raise awareness in Alaska as a visitor destination. So what you'll see is there's a combination of really approaches and tactics in this. The program's really, you know, it's about conversion, getting people up here, but then there's also the awareness part. So through some of the PR work, through some of the television advertising, those are by far the most effective ways to keep Alaska top of mind. And then when someone actually wants, you know, decides that they, or starts snooping around, they might want to come to Alaska, then we have our travel planners and other tactics to make sure that they actually follow through and make their way up here. So the primary target market for Alaska's visitors still is 45 to 65 years old, affluent, married, college-educated, and frequent travelers. We also find that if you've come to Alaska once, you're a lot more likely to come back. And if you come back, if you're a repeat visitor, you're probably going to come back another couple times. So it allows us to be a little bit more focused in terms of who we're going after. So how are we generating requests for all of our travel information? Those 800,000 were generated through online ads, magazine ads, direct mail, television, and miscellaneous. This is the state vacation planner that we send out, and almost 500,000 of these go out a year. It may seem archaic in terms of printing and sending, but it works. And we spend a lot of money on research to make sure that we can justify what we're spending and how we're directing our budgets. And you know, with this, you have about a 10% conversion rate in your first year of those that receive this, and then you can expect that you're going to get another 5% in years 2, 3, 4. So you wind up with a remarkable return on investment with this. Within your reach brochure is actually distributed on in some of your materials, and this is just maybe if you're not identified as a high potential, but you're still interested in learning about Alaska, this is the peak interest, and also kind of provide encouragement. Maybe if you received the travel planner in the past, this can be a follow-up piece in future years. Our North to Alaska brochure, this is the piece that we work on with our Canadian partners. And really, it generates a tremendous return on investment for us. The costs are split on this, even though I think statistics indicate that Alaska gets a little bit more money ultimately than some of the other provinces. So it works out really well for everybody involved, but especially for us. And it's been a great long-term partnership and one that we continue. Our television advertising, these are just some of the networks that you can see, the advertisements. Our Travel Alaska site is just, if you haven't gone to travelalaska.com, I encourage you to do so. It's a tremendous resource. It's also translated into multiple languages and pretty much mirrors this. So if this is an international traveler, you can go to this. Our foreign language websites, German, Japanese, Korean, Spanish, and Chinese. So we don't spend as much money on doing advertising. We don't spend any money on advertising overseas, like in terms of awareness, but the website's a great way to, a cost-effective approach for key markets.
So, all these vehicles of getting our message out, what is the most effective one or the most popular one?
I think it's increasingly, I mean, the television advertising is one that you just can't negate. I mean, when people talk about their images of Alaska, it's a very visual experience. So seeing an advertisement really creates a tremendous amount of awareness, especially when thinking about going on a trip. The role of public relations and articles is becoming more important, especially for younger demographics, as authenticity becomes, they don't want to be sold a trip, but they're willing to read about someone else's and then be inspired to try to do something on it. So I don't know if I could answer that in saying there's one over the other. They kind of work hand in hand, and collectively it allows us to reach our target audience most effectively and kind of court the next generation of our target audience, the younger folks who are going to be the next generation of travelers.
What about the reality shows?
I think that, I mean, that's obviously an interesting one. I think that some people would argue that there's no such thing as bad publicity. I think others would probably disagree with that. I don't know that it's my place to say which. I think there are examples where it's probably not too detrimental. I think we probably cringe more than others do. But at the same time, it is keeping Alaska out there. And yes, there's definitely some reality television shows that I think every Alaskan would rather not be out there. But there's also some that show the state for being a great place to visit. And even though the message isn't precisely on point.
Case in point is the Southeast family.
Unfortunately, we don't have good statistics on measuring that, so it kind of, with what we do within our existing budget, it's all validated by metrics and by conversion studies and research. We haven't spent money on trying to answer those questions, and so I feel I maybe speculate too much in going down that too much. Plus, I don't watch much reality TV because it probably would just... I don't have much time, unfortunately, so I don't know all the TV programs that are out there, unfortunately.
Please go ahead.
So our new Alaska Highway Travel website, again, it's promoting road travel. And I mean, just as an aside, with this could potentially be a really good year for road visitation, and especially for some of the rural communities on the Richardson and along the Tok Highway to get more traffic as gas prices have gone down dramatically. So we'll see how this plays out, but we're optimistic that we could see a boost or a bump in U.S. and Canadian visitation because of the cost of gas going down. Our public relations program, we work with journalists all over the country. This is our signature event, the Alaska Media Roadshow. We bring together basically about 40 Alaskans representing different companies and regions, promoting basically what they have to an equal amount of journalists. This past year, the theme of the event was cultural tourism. We had World Eskimo Indian Olympic athletes at the event. We had Dr. Rosita Worrell from Sea Alaska was there and really tried to make sure we had a good representation across the state and trying to promote something different. We have different themes every year, but this year it happened to coincide with cultural tourism. And this is one of the articles that is an example of what's generated out of that. And this was in Alaska Airlines magazine. If you read Alaska Airlines magazine, obviously they have a vested interest in writing about Alaska, but we also have a tremendous relationship with their editors and writers, and they lean on us for support, for new ideas, and when they need background statistics, it's not uncommon for us to get calls and say, hey, can you help me out where I can find this information? And they've just been a tremendous partner, and really in promoting some of the less well-known aspects of the state. And even if you, I don't know if you noticed a few months ago, they actually came up with one on basically ANCSA and the importance of Alaska Native corporations as business partners. So it's not just promoting the state as a tourist destination, it's also promoting as a place to possibly do business. If you were in Juneau earlier this year, we had the Today Show here. Mm-hmm. At the glacier at 2 a.m. there were almost 2,000 people lined up. Mm. And it was a fight for parking. And it was a tremendous display of support by the community. Natalie Morales was here. She spent a couple days previously going out to Pack Creek, flying up to the glacier, sea kayaking, and really it was a tremendous return on investment. We don't have to pay for this type of thing. The Day Show won't accept sponsorships. Really, the only thing we're delivering is on the ground support and ideas and helping with coordination. So we've had a long term relationship with them, and this event alone provided a return on investment of what the total PR program is budgeted at. These are just some of the events we take part in around the country and around the world for our travel trade events, and then here's some more of them. I'm not going to read through all of them, but it's just more for a point of reference. Some of our international co-promotions with Iceland Air. These are some of the type of basic advertisements and such that you'd see. We also do a lot of sales training and outreach in Iceland Air's key markets to help make sure that they're successful. So this has been a multi-year partnership trying to make sure that they continue to see that 7 to 10% sales growth. So their commitment to Alaska is really solidified. But so far, they've been meeting and exceeding expectations, and we expect to see more visitors coming over on Iceland Air. I kind of led with the collaborating with the private sector. The Alaska Tourism Marketing Board had some inaugural meeting on January 5th and 6th. We've since had another meeting on January 29th, and there's an upcoming meeting in Juneau on March 25th. Representative Hughes is the House designee on that board, and I don't believe there's been a Senate designee just yet, but I'll inform you. If you're interested in being a part of that, we'd certainly welcome your attendance. And I kind of left it with collaborating with private sector as a segue for Sarah's presentation, because obviously our work with ATIA and the broader private sector and in the travel industry is extensive, appreciated, and a huge part of what we do. And if there are any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Yes, go ahead, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jacobson, going back to your work with the Oceans Alaska and the shellfish industry as a part of economic development, I've heard loud and clear from several shellfish farmers out there their concern about state regulation and how that's impacting their overall costs and things like that. Would it, you know, where would you suggest those guys go to try to get their concerns addressed or at least heard? I don't know that the Economic Development Authority would be able to weigh in on their behalf, but how would you address that question?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, I would offer them to come to me directly, because it's possible it could be with DNR, it could be with DEC. It really depends on what regulation they're right. concerned with. I would be happy to serve as the filter just for us to have a better understanding of some of the hurdles. Anecdotally, I would say that I think that while Alaska, obviously permitting is always probably more tedious than anyone likes, no matter what, even when it's done the best. But one of our advantages as far as expansion is if our permitting is challenging, trying to get something done in Washington, Oregon, or California is far more challenging. I think one of the challenges, and maybe something for the committee to consider, is some of the when budget cut discussions are being made, in making those cuts, are you going to be cutting a position that actually is providing a quick and responsive approach to some of the challenges of the industry? And I know that's been a concern. I can't make a recommendation. I would just say that I think that's been a threat that's been voiced to me, is that if we don't have the people doing the testing that we need to be able to get our product to market, then we don't have an industry. So I could do more research and provide that for you. I just was gonna, if I was gonna flag something, I would flag that.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, Joe, appreciate the presentation. One more question, not really a question, but a heads up so we can get to Ms. Leonard's presentation, is in an earlier meeting I asked Representative Tilton, CNRI chair, if she could take on the task of recommendation 1D in the Alaska Arctic Policy Report, and because it's probably fits better with her CNRA responsibility. Maybe just a brief comment, and then we'll go to Sarah here.
So I think that when I thought about this the other night when I received the question, I mean, and kind of as I addressed it initially, in improving entrepreneurship and business development and that kind of spirit in any part of Alaska, especially the Arctic or rural Alaska, it's a multi-generational approach, and it spans all sectors. I mean, if you don't have basic services, you're much less likely to get to a point where you can receive education, which means you're much less likely to be able to appreciate a community developer, an economic developer, and small business financing. So I think there has to be a holistic approach to that. I think that, I mean, some of the basic things that we looked at, I mean, we've been working with the Cole Climate Housing Research Center on a more community-driven, holistic approach to development. So just to make sure that if you're doing something in a community, it's not scattershot in one organization investing in one thing, yet there's all these other gaping holes to try to address community issues in a concerted approach to have the community participation be a key part of that from the very beginning. I think that there may be tweaks in the way we have, you know, our ARDA program doesn't have full representation across the state, particularly in parts of the Arctic. So, I mean, there may be an argument for exploring our regional economic development model. I think that increasing the ability of funds like the Rural Development Initiative Fund to provide financing to small businesses in rural parts of the state is critical. Access to capital is key. That fund is extremely popular, and honestly, we frequently have to turn people down because we don't have, we've reached our max within the fund. So until we receive payoffs, we're not allowed to, we can't loan more. I think the cultural tourism aspect and rural tourism is obviously an opportunity, and really I think that, and I didn't mention it with the unmanned aircraft system, is finding career pathways and finding the opportunities that are going to drive industries of the future. Unmanned aircraft system, something that if you look at the work they've been doing in Wainwright, they've been getting the community involved, and in some respects that industry could be the aviation industry of yesteryear for current generation. And just, again, seeing, I think studies have shown that once kids lose hope, they're not sponges anymore. So it's just kind of everything, you can throw whatever you want, but it's kind of over. I think having that career pathway and seeing a way forward and having a fruitful life wherever you may be, and finding and focusing on those industries is critical. This is a little bit extemporaneous, but I'd be happy to work with you privately to flesh this out a little bit further.
Thank you.
I'd like to meet with you and we can work a little further on this.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joe, for your presentation, and look forward to working with you. We'll take a brief leave so staff can set up. This morning is Sarah Leonard, President and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association, and we'll work off the paper until we get the visuals. Please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation. I'm sorry for waiting so long. You're very patient. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, my name is Sarah Leonard. I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. I have one of my board members here as well, Tim McDonald with TEMSCO, who will be available to answer any questions. Thanks again for inviting ATIA to this committee. The Alaska Travel Industry Association is Alaska's leading statewide nonprofit membership organization for the travel industry. We have over 600 members. We advocate for a healthy tourism industry and help promote Alaska as a premier travel destination. I'm moving to the slide, page 3, with our membership information. With our over 600 members, we are quite diverse. We're statewide, and we're made up of tourism businesses from different sectors and regions of the state, including bed and breakfast owners, tour guides, transportation organizations, small and large cruise ship companies, and community convention and visitor bureaus. Our members provide quality experiences in places all over Alaska, from our national parks, like in Southwest Alaska, Lake Clark National Park, to the Chugach State Park, which borders Anchorage Hillside and is my backyard, and along the Kenai River and as far north as Barrow. Most of our members are small to medium-sized businesses or organizations. The majority of our membership, or 73%, have less than 20 employees.
Please go ahead.
I'm on page 4. ATIA's member services include those of a traditional membership-based and industry association. For example, ATIA hosts the largest gathering of tourism industry professionals during our annual convention and trade show. This year, we are excited to be back here in Juneau in October, and we will be hosting a cultural arts and heritage tourism summit along with our full convention, and those dates are October 5th through the 8th. I'm on page 5. It's a picture of our website.
Oh, okay.
One One of our association's goals is to increase the quality of tourism industry through educational and training opportunities that can reach people in Anchorage or Juneau or Nome. Over the last 2 years, ATI has enhanced our website by providing access and information on tourism training and professional development opportunities. And I had the screenshot just click under where that's found under our member tools. This is an online clearinghouse, which includes tourism presentations from industry experts and information on the educational programs that are available to students or those in our industry across the state.
So just for an interruption here, briefly, we've been joined by the Kenai High School basketball team, that two rows of registered sweatshirts in the back. And just for the record, for the recorder, is I'd like to acknowledge my grandson, Keith Ivey, back there.
We love.
So, Sarah, if you could continue your presentation.
Sure. And at perfect timing, Mr. Chairman, I'm just on the slide about our ATI Foundation. For some students in the room, our industry supports tourism scholarships for Alaska students through the ATI Foundation. So we've supported students to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars in scholarships distributed to over 150 students pursuing their careers in travel and tourism in Alaska. This year, our scholarship review committee will be able to recommend nearly $20,000 in scholarships. These are supported by individual and our business donations, as well as we participate in the Pick, Click, Give program.
Right. And Representative Ortiz, my grandson's other grandparents are your constituents.
Ah. Okay. Well, welcome. Extra welcome.
Do you have a question?
I do. This particular slide, can you tell me about it? This is a constituent of mine who is the picture holding the fish. What's the connection there?
She is one of the scholarship award recipients, and she received the Chris Geldecker Memorial Scholarship, which is in memory of a person in our industry, Chris, and received one of our scholarships. We ask our winners to provide us pictures so that we can share their stories and promote the scholarship program.
So the scholarships are for further education, or are they for business development, or what are they?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, they're for both. We have continuing education scholarships, and also for high school students entering their academic world and to interest them in pursuing careers in the travel industry.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now we're live, so you can advance to where you need to be.
I'm right at the slide.
Okay.
A huge part of our member service is acting as a link to Alaska's tourism marketing program. You heard from Joe. This slide lists the cooperative marketing opportunities available to businesses as part of that program and the service delivery ATIA provides at trade shows. ATIA has been longtime partners with the state of Alaska in how we promote our state as a tourism destination. Today, the ATI team are experts in the tourism marketing program while supporting our members and industry overall with education and global networking opportunities. Our membership and industry-focused organization has been operating in some form in the state for over 30 years, and we have learned how to be flexible in ever-changing political and fiscal climates. We implement services and programs efficiently and effectively for the benefit of our members and the tourism industry overall, and we are seeing results, we believe. Alaska's visitor industry is an important economic engine for the state moving forward. With the strong reinvestment state leaders have made in Alaska tourism marketing, we were able to attract nearly 2 million visitors to Alaska last year. And these are visitors spending monies on tours as well as public land permits, campground stays, hotel stays, rental cars, food, laundry services. So the benefits are spread around. The visitors helped generate over $100 million in state revenues and $78 million in municipal revenues, and these are generated through a variety of taxes and other fees that help fund services benefiting our residents and communities. 1 in 11 jobs within the visitor industry, we believe, are within the visitor industry, creating an important part of Alaska's employment picture. And generating $1.8 billion in-state visitor spending, helping support large and small tourism businesses, and $1.24 billion in labor income was created by tourism business employment. CTI's story that we like to share about our industry is that tourism works for Alaska. So with strong reinvestment in tourism marketing dollars, Alaska is able to attract millions of visitors annually and generate revenue to the state with in-state visitor spending, which in turn supports large and small business owners. And this adds, for them to be able to add or hire more people, this adds more money into our economy. All this creates business growth and helps benefits Alaskans with resources, services, and infrastructure. I have a few slides on visitor statistics, and so I'll go through them briefly in the interest of time, but please stop me if you have questions.
Sure.
In 2013, we saw an almost 7% increase in summer visitation with record-breaking numbers of travelers coming to Alaska that year. Our winter visitation brought us closer to the 2 million visitors. The 2% drop last summer, you'll see on this slide, was largely attributed to a small reduction in cruise capacity, but it's projected to increase by 3% this coming summer. And businesses have been reporting to us anecdotally that pre-bookings for 2015 are strong, and stronger even than last year, and we're predicting an increase over summer 2014. We're looking strong. That's what we're hearing from our businesses. How are our visitors getting here? Just under 1 million of our summer visitors travel by cruise ship. 38% come by air, and 4% drove the highway or traveled to and from Alaska on the Alaska Marine Highway System. And where do our visitors come from? Over 80% of our visitors are domestic visitors coming primarily from the western and southern U.S. International visitors make up 10% of our travelers, not including Canada, which is close behind with 7%. The U.K. and Australia are two of our primary international markets, and Alaska receives strong visitation from those countries. What this slide doesn't show is the growing interest by all visitors in regions like the Arctic, and I just wanted to focus a little bit on the Arctic. There could be a huge opportunity for businesses and communities in this region, as visitors from around the world are already choosing Alaska for the iconic images in the Arctic, like viewing northern lights, wanting to see a polar bear, or even just crossing the Arctic Circle in an airplane. Opportunities exist with being able to market to and accommodate the growing interest in Alaska from visitors from around the globe. Overall, Southeast, South Central, and the interior regions capture the majority of our visitors. Southwest Alaska and the far north, including the Arctic region, receive 4% and 2% of visitation. These are low percentages when you look at the other regions of the state. However, when you consider the potential new opportunities in the Arctic and even smaller changes, they can make a huge impact to businesses that operate in Arctic communities. In 2012 and 2013, these visitation numbers translated into, for the far north, for example, total visitor spending of $30 million, 300 jobs, and a total labor impact of $12 million. So ATI is the advocacy, is the voice for Alaska's tourism industry, representing large and small businesses at policy discussions, including those involving reinvesting in tourism marketing, and how to implement the program professionally, efficiently, and with continued results. Joe mentioned the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board. Last year, ATI worked with elected leaders, and in particular Senator McGuire, to pass Senate Bill 194, creating the Alaska Tourism Marketing Board, or the ATMB, with the goal to have government and industry work together to plan and execute a tourism marketing plan for Alaska. The board is made up of 21 members. 18 industry representatives are recommended by ATIA, and there's a representative from the Department of Commerce, and one from the House and one Senate appointee. And we're happy to see Representative Hughes working with us to promote Alaska. The ATI Board of Directors met last August.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you. I hope I'm not jumping ahead of myself here. I've been looking at this, and this is quite informative, but I find it a little odd that I don't see anything in here about your funding or where you get it or how it comes through. Am I jumping ahead of myself?
No, and I can answer that question, Representative Hughes, through the chair. Our funding at the association is through membership dues. Our convention, our annual convention, brings in revenue, and then our largest revenue is our state contract, where we are a contractor to the state to help implement the marketing plan.
All of it?
Please.
So you, by those avenues, you have enough to fund yourself totally?
Yes, we're a nonprofit association, and through those are our major revenue sources.
And you're self-sustaining?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've been here since 2009, and we've gone through several seasons of iterations on this. So it's always a high-profile item.
I appreciate the question.
Thank you.
The ATI Board of Directors met last August to review the applications from industry members and to make the recommendations of qualified candidates representing various regions and market sectors, as well as having the marketing expertise to help guide the marketing program. These were the industry recommendations our board put forward for the ATMB. And we thank, again, the legislature and both bodies for passing Senate Bill 194 unanimously last session and look forward to strengthening this public-private partnership. ATI and the industry believe it's vital to have this professional industry input into the marketing plan and its strategies that many of our businesses rely upon for their success. ATI addresses additional and various issues that are brought forward to our membership throughout the year. These include anything from public land issues, arts and cultural resources, permitting processes, and other economic development topics, including growing interest in Alaska's Arctic. And as our climate changes and Arctic waters become more easily accessible, this could open up new economic development opportunities, including Alaska tourism growth in this region. ATI applauds the legislature in raising these discussions and engaging partners now and addressing some challenging issues. We think it's the right thing to do for Alaska businesses and communities. ATI wants to ensure our industry has a voice at the table when both the state and federal government are discussing policy as it affects Alaska's Arctic and the transition of the chairmanship of the Arctic Council as it comes back to the United States. As we start to see increase in interest from visitors and activity from the tourism industry, like there are some new cruise and land itineraries in the Arctic, we want to be on the forefront of those issues. What are the available community resources and access and infrastructure in Arctic communities? What are the safety issues, including reliable communication and monitoring as it relates to either passenger safety or wildlife impacts? What are the business investment costs? And are Alaska Arctic communities ready or even wanting increased activity and visitation? ATI will be addressing these issues and other topics at our convention in October here in Juneau. And we are planning an Arctic tourism panel for Monday, October 5th, and are just beginning stages of shaping that discussion. We welcome members of the legislature for you to join us there. That dialogue and other discussion within ATI will inform our own organization's public policy position on Arctic tourism. We believe tourism is a renewable resource, and ATI members work continuously to market Alaska to potential visitors, and that's why we are proud of the economic and quality of life benefits our industry brings back to Alaska. Through ATI's strong partnerships with our members and other organizations, I believe our businesses will continue to grow and create jobs across our state for years to come. Thank you again for having me here today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Sarah, has Craig Fleener, the Arctic Policy Advisor to the Governor, asked you to be a member of the host committee for the Arctic Council?
Mr. Chairman, I have not received any communication from Mr. Fleener.
Well, I'm going to have the committee sign a letter to Mr. Fleener that we suggest that you won't have to reinvent the wheel if your group is a part of that committee.
That's much appreciated. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll take care of it. I'll have everyone sign it, ask everyone to sign it, and then we'll forward it to Craig. So we do have Tim McNaught. Please go ahead.
Ask a couple of questions here, too. Is that?
Yes, please.
A couple things. On that bar graph that talked about the different regions and where the tourists go, you know, to what parts of the state, and you mentioned that the bar graph shows a low percentage for the northern area. Has that grown though? Are those bars going up even though they're small? Are they increasing for the most northern areas?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, over the course of many years, I think those numbers have remained stable. However, we just had this discussion on our team and hearing anecdotally from tourism businesses that operate in the Arctic that they're seeing more visitors reserve their trips for this upcoming summer than ever before. So it'll be interesting to see next year when, if the state is able to do research on if those bar columns change, and there is increase.
One more question. You mentioned briefly about winter travel to Alaska. Is there a concerted effort to see how we can better develop winter tourism activities in Alaska? Are you guys working in that particular area?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, ATIA, the industry, and along with our partners at the state of Alaska and through the tourism marketing plan, have a focus on promoting winter tourism activities. At our last convention, we also held a pre-summit with the day before our convention focused on winter tourism promotion. And that's a continued discussion, and we hear a lot from members that want to grow how we do that.
Thank you very much.
Okay, any other questions for Sarah? Also, Tim McDonnell is a board member of the association. Tim, would you like to make some comments, please? Put yourself on the record. And
Tim ahead. McDonnell, vice president for Temsco Helicopters, living here in Juneau. As you can see, I'm the senior person here on this side of the table.
No, I think there's someone older than you in the room.
No, at the table. I'm sorry.
There you go.
Sorry, Chair. I would just, if Sarah needed any help on some historical stuff, as I've been around for a while, I was here to help her, so that basically why I signed up to assist her in any other questions that were historical situations or where tourism has come from to where it is today. So with that, that's basically what why I was here.
Well, if you wish, we're going to gavel out here in a minute. You might as well have the last word then.
Well, okay, I'll give you a little history of what I think where tourism started and where it is today. I started as a college student in 1970 as a bus driver with Chuck West in Fairbanks. I have worked 28 years in the cruise industry, from going from bus driver to eventually vice president of Alaska operations for Holland America and Princess Cruises. And the last 15 years, I've worked for Temsco Helicopters as their vice president of marketing and sales. So for me to say in the last 45 years, to see where tourism has gone is incredible. What a ride it has been. What a great career I have had. And I can only, as I tell young people who come along, we're only at the tip of the iceberg of where this thing can go. I mean, to where we were in covered wagon days, to where we're doing today, very very young association in a sense, but very progressive, and I'm very proud to be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. And, yes, a question? Daniel Tez.
Question for either person. The idea of the Alaska brand and our image out there in terms of tourists and hitting the tourist market, is the Alaska brand holding up, and what are the keys to making sure that that we appear to be, or we are in fact
travel, as soon as you say the word Alaska, everybody's ears perk up. I don't care where you are in the lower 48. But let's not forget, it is a very complicated / competitive world out there in travel. It's easier to travel. It's around the world, Europe and everything. So our competition is very aggressive. So making sure our word Alaska is out there through the marketing efforts, as Joe and Sarah have explained, is extremely important. It's not just generally accepted that Alaska is a slam dunk. We have a lot of competition out there.
Thank you.
Yep.
One final comment, Sarah. Work with Rob Earl, my staff, in crafting the letter to Craig Fleener. I want to put in the salient facts why your organization would be a really good fit for the two-year effort of all the Arctic meetings that are going to happen in the next 2 years, starting in April, there are going to be world, or from around the circumpolar world, 15 of those 20 meetings are going to be in Alaska and all over Alaska. So your organization is the right fit. So
we very much appreciate it, and I'll definitely work with Rob. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me for the coughing. Okay, Joe, Tim, and Sarah, thank you very much. At 12:50, we adjourn this meeting. Thank you.